Well, all right, let's open up our Bibles to the sixth chapter of the book of Daniel, Daniel chapter 6. Now, the sixth chapter brings us to the end of what we would call the historical portion of the book of Daniel. By way of review, the first five chapters, you remember that we've got Daniel in Babylon, of course, King Nebuchadnezzar. He's sort of the guy that's running the show, and then in chapter six, then we have Daniel in Persia, and of course Darius and Cyrus are the main characters there, and then what we will have is chapter 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12. This is where we now move into the prophetic. Into the dreams and the visions. This is where Daniel begins to talk about these various empires that will be on the rise and so forth. But in chapter 6 now, we come to probably the most famous story out of the life of Daniel. Daniel is now 85, 90 years of age. He is an extremely old man, and it's interesting that the most famous story of his life happens really towards the end of his life. Now, as I say, he is in Persia. Persia was a massive empire. Persia was a huge and just a very prosperous empire. And at this time, it is being governed by Cyrus. And Cyrus was even called by the Lord the Anointed King. Not only did the Lord call Cyrus the anointed king, but in Isaiah 44, he said, "Cyrus, my shepherd, will fulfill all my will, even to say to Jerusalem, you shall be built, and to the temple you shall be set up." And so God is going to move on this guy's heart, and this guy is going to allow Israel to go back, repatriate the land. They're going to begin to rebuild the temple. They're going to begin to rebuild the city. And he is a fascinating, fascinating character. Cyrus the Great said of success, he said, "Success should always call for the showing of greater kindness, generosity, justice. Only people lost in darkness treat it as an occasion for greater greed." He understood that when you experience success in your life, that success should be used in some measure to sort of pay back. It's also interesting that he brought to an end slavery. He said, "I prevent slavery, and my governors and subordinates are obligated to prohibit the exchanging of men and women as slaves within their ruling domains." It's also interesting that he called for the freedom of religion, just so that we understand what a cutting-edge guy this guy was. "I will respect the religions of the nations in my empire and never let any of my governors and subordinates look down on or insult them." So think about this guy. He's called of the Lord the anointed. He's called of the Lord the shepherd. He does away with slavery. He brings in freedom of religion. And one of the other things about this guy is that he is able to spot talent. You know, one of the signs of a great leader is that they are able to see talent in other people. You know, sometimes you'll see in a church where you've got a pastor that is very insecure. And a lot of times that insecurity will show up in controlling, trying to control things, not allowing, you know, the talent to rise to the top. Because look, if I let this guy teach a Bible study and he does a better job than I do, I'm out of a job. I got to find health insurance now. And, you know, and so there's always this suppression. And yet what we see in so many great leaders is they're able to look, where is the talent here? Who can I put in the game and who can I use? And so this guy quickly spots Daniel. And he's going to give Daniel just a primo spot within the empire. So as we begin in verse 1 now with Daniel in Persia, we read this. "Now, it pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be over the whole kingdom and over these three governors of whom Daniel was one. and that the satraps might give an account to them so that the king would not suffer loss. Now, one of the problems that we have here is that we read this name Darius, and we think, well, wait a minute. And Darius, I thought Cyrus the Great was the guy that was in charge of all of this. Now, we have to understand is that Darius is a title. And the title is one who holds the scepter. It's the guy that is in charge. He was known as Darius. Now, it's very interesting that we found a cylinder that Cyrus wrote upon, and it said that King Cyrus had made Gubaro the Mede ruler over all of Babylon. Now, you remember at the end of chapter 5, we read that Darius came in, conquered the city of Babylon, and we would read that and we would think, oh, okay, it must be talking about King Darius. No, Darius is just a title. And what we are told in the record is that Cyrus had apparently turned over the leadership of the city of Babylon to this guy, Gubaro. Now, what is interesting is that we know that this guy was born in 601. We know that Babylon fell in 539, which, of course, would make Gubaro 62 when he began to take control of the city of Babylon. Now, what was the last thing that we read in chapter 5, verse 31? And Darius the Median took the kingdom, being about 62 years of age. All right, so this isn't King Darius. This is Darius. This is the guy that is running the show. This is the guy whose hand is on the scepter. Now, in the beginning, we find King Cyrus turning over control to this Gubaro. Now, how long did he run the show? A couple of weeks, a couple of months, a couple of years? We don't know. But what we do know is that Cyrus has made the decision of how the structure of the government was now going to run. You have Darius, again, the guy holding the scepter. He is in the upper tier. Now, just below him, then you've got these three governors. We don't know the names of the other two. All we know is the name Daniel. Daniel is one of them. And then this empire has been divided into 120 states, 120 provinces, and each of these provinces, each of these states have a guy over it. And so these 120, they now are reporting to these three governors, and now these three governors are reporting now to Darius, the guy holding the scepter. Well, notice quickly in verse 3 that Daniel distinguished himself above the governors and the satraps because of his excellent spirit that was in him. And the king gave thought to setting him over the whole realm. Notice that Daniel distinguishes himself. Daniel is presenting himself as being preferred over everybody else. Quickly, Cyrus realizes, I've got a superstar on my hands here. I mean, I have got a guy that he knows what in the world is going on. And he is so impressed with Daniel because of this excellent spirit that was in him. He's a man of integrity. He's a man of honesty. He certainly is a man of faith that at this point now, he's giving thought to restructuring the whole government because of the ability of this one man. And he was going to restructure it. So why should I meet with three guys? He's thinking to himself, why don't I just meet with one guy? I got one guy here that I trust. And so I'll find a governor to replace him. I'll bring him up closer to me. He can meet with the three. And then that way I just have to meet with this guy. Well, apparently now word is beginning to be rumored about the palace that a restructuring is very possible. And there are a lot of guys that aren't interested in restructuring at all. So notice what happens in verse 4. So the governors and the satraps, they sought to find some charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom. But they could find no charge or fault because, he was faithful. Nor was there any error or fault found in him. Then these men said, we shall not find any charge against this Daniel unless we find it against him concerning the law of his God. Now imagine you find yourself in the crosshairs of the American government, the IRS, the NSA, the EPA. I mean, all of the eyes of government are now turned on you, and they are combing through your life. They are looking for something that they could, going through, you know, your browsing history, going through, you know, all of your cell phone calls. And imagine the government is looking through your life, and they can't find one thing wrong with you. Now, understand, Daniel has been involved in government for how long? 70 years. And of course, government is considered probably what? The slimiest profession known to man. And so here is a guy living 70 years of his life in a moral cesspool, in an ethical cesspool. And yet in that environment, he is not tainted one bit at all. And so these guys know, hey, if we're going to find anything against him, we're going to have to create a situation where he must choose between pleasing his God or pleasing our king. This is the only way that we're going to be able to get this guy. So notice then, verse 6, they got a plan. So these governors and satraps, they throng before the king. And they say to him, King Darius, live forever. For all the governors of the kingdom and the administrators and the satraps and the counselors and the administrators, and they have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whoever petitions any god or man for 30 days, except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing so that it cannot be changed according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which does not alter. And therefore, King Darius, he signed the decree. Now, notice they are lying there. Notice that they say all of the governor. How many governors were there? There were three. Do you suppose that they had consulted with Daniel? I think not here. And so they're starting out with a lie. Now notice they want this written and they want this signed. Now, again, we will see in just a moment that the Persian government was not like the Babylonian government. The Babylonian government, I mean, Nebuchadnezzar, he ruled with an iron hand. But among the Medes and the Persians, once a law was signed, once a bill was signed into law, there was no altering, there was no changing. And so this is why they are so anxious. Look, let's get it on the books and let's make sure that it has your signature to it. Now think about how stupid this is, but what are they doing? They are appealing to this man's pride. I mean, think about how dumb it would be for this king to sign this into law. Do you mean to tell me for the next 30 days, you want every single person in your realm to ask for advice? Really? That's what you want? Should I have oatmeal today, O great king, or should I have scrambled eggs? What should I? I mean, you talk about driving yourself insane. Everybody in the empire, they have to ask him for everything. But it's appealing to his pride. You're going to be the big shot. Nobody can ask anything but from you. Now look, when you know that there are people that are kissing up to you, when you know when people are, you know, oh, you're so awesome, you're so great, you're so wonderful, and that you know that they are just setting you up for something, and that's exactly what's going on here. And it is always wisdom just to put the brakes on just a little bit. What are you setting me up for? But this guy, he doesn't look that far down the road. Now, notice that they say there that they want them to be fed to the lions. Now, you remember that in Babylon, they started you on fire. But the Medes and the Persians, they fed you to the lions. That is because the Medes and the Persians, their primary religion was known as Zoroastrianism, and it still exists today. And it was kind of a works-oriented thing. You got to have good thoughts, good words, good deeds, and so forth. But they also believed that fire purifies. That's why in certain parts of Iran today, they have these fire walking ceremonies and these fire jumping ceremonies. It's all a part of Zoroastrianism. And so if you're getting ready to punish a bad guy, you don't want to start him on fire because you don't even have a decent afterlife, right? You want him to suffer a little bit. We don't want him purified. So they wouldn't purify you. Rather, they just feed you to the lions. And so the king, he signs this. Now, notice verse 10. Now, when Daniel, very interesting that when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went home and in his upper room with his windows open towards Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees three times a day and he praised and he gave thanks unto God as it was his custom since the early days. And then these men assembled and they found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. Now notice this was not an oops, all right? This was not a mistake on Daniel's part. He understands what the government has done. He now knows what has been signed into law, and he is deliberately, he's willfully violating the laws of the government. Now, notice that we're told there that he opened his window toward Jerusalem, prayed towards Jerusalem. Now, for us as believers today, we don't pray towards Jerusalem. We don't try and figure out, you know, the points of the compass so that we know what direction to kneel in. Why is he doing it? He is doing it because the Old Testament advised this to be done. You remember that when Solomon was dedicating his temple and he's praying before the Lord, and he said, now look, if this nation ever gets in trouble and they are defeated by an outside power and they are carried away captive, then Solomon prayed, if they'll pray in the land of their enemies, which led them away captive, and pray unto you towards their land, which you gave unto their fathers, and the city which you have chosen, and the house that I have built for your name, then hear their prayer and their supplication in heaven, your dwelling place, and maintain their cause. So all he is doing is following the word of God. Look, we are in captivity. I am in the land of my enemies. And so now I'm going to turn towards Jerusalem and I'm going to pray that God will hear my prayer. So he is deliberately now violating, this is civil disobedience, whenever the law of man causes us to walk in disobedience to God, well, the law of man is to be forsaken. As long as the government is allowing us to walk in harmony with the word of God, we have no problem with the laws of government. But now we've got a problem here. So then in verse 16, or verse 12 rather, and then they went before the king and they spoke concerning the king's decree. Have you not signed a decree that every man who petitions any god or man within 30 days, except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions? And the king answered and said, the thing is true, according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which does not alter. And so they answered and they said unto the king, that Daniel, who is one of the captives of Judah, does not show due regard to you, O king, or for the decree that you have signed, but makes his petition three times a day. Not only does he do it once, he does it three times a day. And the king, when he heard these words, was greatly displeased within himself. And he set his heart on Daniel to deliver him. And he was laboring until the going down of the sun to deliver him. And then these men approached the king, and they said to the king, know, O king, that it is the law of the Medes and the Persians that no decree or statute which the king establishes may be changed. Now, he's upset with himself. He knows he's been played. These guys, they got me. Now, how bad would you feel if you knew that your actions were going to cause an innocent person to lose their life? Now, notice that He's sorry now that he signed this into law. And notice that he is working until evening. I mean, he's got his legal team on this. I mean, he's got every lawyer in the land. I mean, looking at this law, looking to find some sort of a loophole. Now, the way that they carried out capital punishment in Persia is that you were killed on the very same day that you were found guilty, all right? So this guy, in other words, Daniel's not on death row. I mean, he doesn't have days or weeks or months to find some sort of a loophole. I mean, he just has a few hours here that he's got to find a way to get this guy off. Now, notice that they come back to him and they say, look, you know how it works here, that you cannot change this. Now, again, this takes us back to the statue that Nebuchadnezzar saw in his dream, how that you have these precious metals that are descending in their value. You got the head of gold, you got the bronze, or the silver, the bronze, the iron, and then the mixture of the iron and clay together. And you remember that Daniel said to Nebuchadnezzar that you are the head of gold. But then after Nebuchadnezzar passes off the scene, eventually there's going to be another empire. Again, it's going to be a lesser empire. This is the Medes and the Persians. Now, how were they less? Because their kings did not have the authority that Nebuchadnezzar had. You remember that Daniel said back in chapter 5, he said, all peoples, nations, and languages trembled and feared before him, talking about Nebuchadnezzar. Whomever he wished, he executed. Whomever he wished, he kept alive. I mean, he could sign something into law for breakfast, and then he'd change it at lunch, and then he'd bring it back, you know, for dinner, and then he would do away with it when he went to bed. He didn't care. I mean, he had complete and total control, but not the Persian kings. And so this guy knows that they have him. Now, look what happens in verse 16. And so the king gave the command, and they brought Daniel. And they cast him into the den of lions. But the king spoke, saying to Daniel, your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you. And then notice, interesting, a stone was brought and laid at the mouth of the den. And the king sealed it with his own signet ring and the signets of his lords, that the purpose concerning Daniel might not be changed. So he can't find a loophole. Daniel, I am so sorry. I can't believe it. Look, I know your God. Your God is going to be able to get you out of this. Now, notice how this is an Old Testament picture of Christ. Notice how that as Jesus was put in that place of death and that stone was rolled over the mouth of it, and then as, of course, Pilate put his seal over that mouth, now all of a sudden we see Daniel going into that place of death. We see the stone being rolled in front of it, and then the seals are being placed on it. And again, just as Daniel is going to be delivered, so the Lord Jesus Christ was delivered as well. And so now the king, he went to his palace. He spent the night fasting. No musicians, he didn't want to be entertained, were brought before him. And also his sleep went from him. And then the king, he rose very early in the morning, and he went with haste to the den of lions. And then he came to the den, and he cried out with a lamenting voice to Daniel. The king spoke, saying, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions? And Daniel said unto the king, O king, live forever. No hard feelings. My God set his angel to shut the mouth of the lions so that they have not hurt me because I was found innocent before him. I was innocent before the angel. And also, O king, I have done no wrong before you. So this king, he's got great affection for Daniel. And you really wondered what that sounded like. It's early morning, right? There's no light down there. And of course, he opens up the lid from that thing. Daniel, are you there? You know, I won't be surprised if you're not, but are you there? And then what was it like for him to hear Daniel's voice coming back out of that darkness? Hey, man, I'm okay. And so this becomes, I mean, look, had this guy bailed, think about the testimony that would have been lost. You know, we are just creatures that just like to take that path of least resistance. We just do that all the time. But great testimonies are not found on the path of least resistance. Great testimonies are found on that path of obedience, even when it leads through the valley of the shadow of death. And so then we have in verse 23, then the king, he was exceedingly glad for him and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. And so Daniel was taken out of the den and no injury, there wasn't a scratch on the guy, was even found on him because, now notice, because he believed God. Now mark that very carefully. Why does Daniel end up where he ended up? Because he believed his God. There is an awful theological position. I just can't understand how this thing continues to go on and on and on in the church. This whole wealth, health and wealth gospel, this whole positive confession business, that if you have enough faith, you will never see hard times in your life. How do they sell that? I mean, clearly they cannot sell it to anybody that knows the Bible. Now, here is Daniel. He finds himself in a very uncomfortable position. And why does he find himself there? Because he has unbelief, because he has sin. Look, he's gone on record. I've done nothing wrong. And he believed his God. No sin and great faith in this man. And this man still ends up in the lion's den. How can we say the pain that is in our life is the result of a lack of faith or unbelief or disobedience before God? That is not a scriptural position. And so now notice what happens to the guys that got Daniel into this mess in the first place, verse 24. And the king gave a commandment, and they brought those men who had accused Daniel, and they cast them in the lion's den, them, their children, and their wives. Ladies, do not marry satraps, all right? And the lions overpowered them, and notice, broke all of their bones in pieces before they ever came to the bottom of the den. You see, the skeptics say, well, you see what happens is, lions, they don't eat every day, all right? They eat what, every 3, 4, 5 days, something like that. And so when Daniel was in there, they were just well fed, and they just weren't hungry. Well, clearly, these kitty cats were very, very hungry at this time. Now, it's interesting what the Persians did. Marcellinus tells us that the laws among the Persians are formidable, by which, on account of the guilt of one, all the family perishes. You see, if they killed your dad, they don't want you to remain alive, so that as you then enter into adulthood, you got this chip on your shoulder like Indigo Montoya, and you're going to come back and get a little revenge, all right? So they just kill everybody, and that's how they kept control. And then finally in verse 25, and then King Darius wrote to all peoples and nations and languages that dwell on the earth, peace be multiplied unto you. I make a decree that every dominion of my kingdom and the men must tremble and fear before the God of Daniel, for he is the living God and steadfast forever. His kingdom is the one which shall never be destroyed, and his dominion shall endure to the end. And he delivers and rescues, and he works signs and wonders in the heaven and on the earth. Who has delivered Daniel from the power of the lions? Again, what kind of life impacts you? What kind of life? Think of the people that have had just great influence in your life, people that you've kind of maybe even stood at a distance from, and you've just admired what you've seen. Is it the person that's born with the silver spoon in their mouth? The person that really has not really known adversity? They've just kind of skated through life. Is that the kind of person that really impacts you? Or is it the person that that really has had a lot of adversity? Is it the person like a Joni Erickson? You know, that person that goes through great hardship and yet they retain their faith. Look, we're always interested. I want to be a witness for the Lord. I want my life to impact this world for the cause of Christ. And yet, how many of us at the first sign of trouble, we are running in the opposite direction to get away from anything that is uncomfortable at all? Look, impactful lives are lives that are so oftentimes lived on that difficult trail. And how many times are we praying to get out of the very environment that God wants to use in order that our lives might make an impact upon those who are looking on to our lives? Well, then notice, after his faithfulness, verse 28, and so Daniel, he prospered in the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. And so it comes to an end now. The personal aspect of the book of Daniel comes to an end. And now, beginning next time we get together in chapter 7, we're going to get into the prophetic aspect of it. So let's talk about applications of chapter 6. First of all, we were able to see in chapter 1 that sometimes God delivers from. Sometimes you're delivered from hardship. You know, you had a lump in your neck and, oh my goodness, it's cancer and I'm going to be dead in a week. And, you know, you go in and you get it taken care of and it wasn't cancer and I'm going to live a little bit longer. And we're sort of kept from the trial, aren't we? Daniel was kept from the trial in chapter 1. He went to the guy that was over all of these young men and he said, "Now look, I don't want to stir up trouble. I know I'm new here on the block, but look, I'm not going to eat that, all right? So look, let's just do a little test here, all right? Give me a few days, 10 days. If we look good, we'll keep on our diet." And the Lord blessed. And nothing really came out of that. Sometimes God delivers through, like he did with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They went through the fiery furnace. Now we find Daniel going through the lion's den. And sometimes God leads us right into that hardship, but yet he delivers us through. And then sometimes we are delivered by the valley of the shadow of death. We're going to see in chapter 12 that the Lord will say to Daniel, "All right now, all right, old man, it's time for you to take your rest. But in the end of days, in the end of time, you're going to come back and you're going to step into your reward." And what he was basically saying is that, okay, Daniel, it's time for you to come home. And Daniel died. And sometimes as we go through that valley of the shadow of death, we're delivered there. I think another thing is that promotion should only come from God rather than our own efforts. You know, you try and manipulate and you try and scratch and claw. I mean, we see over and over again how many times Daniel and his three friends, they're promoted. Was it some grand scheme? I mean, did they have some, great plan? I know how I'm going to get promoted. No, all they're doing is just doing the next thing that they know that God wants them to do, and God blesses them. See, what we have to understand is that if you are striving to attain, then you're going to strive to attain. If you are attaining by clawing and scratching your way to the top, then you're only going to stay in the top by scratching and clawing your way there. But if you get to the top by trusting in the Lord, how do you stay on top? Well, you just keep trusting the Lord, right? So Daniel, we see that he just rests. Daniel was committed to prayer, the discipline in prayer. In fact, prayer was not an incidental thing in his life. I mean, it was the most important thing. And even when the government said, "You're not going to pray," this guy said, "No, I'm going to pray, and I don't care what you got to do. Throw me in a den of lions. I don't care. I'm going to pray." And then he surrendered to the purposes, whether he's going to be delivered or not. I mean, he didn't know. I mean, he didn't know what God was going to do here, but yet he was surrendered to the Lord. And then there are no promises being exempt from the lions of life. There's just no promises. When you came to the Lord didn't give you, all right, now here's a contract. You're going to trust in Jesus. And because you trust in Jesus, you're never going to see a mouth of a lion open. You're never going to go into a fiery furnace. You're never going to have any kind of trouble. I didn't get one of those contracts. I doubt if you got one too. But all the Lord requires of us is that in every season that we go through, we just give the Lord faithfulness. And we just trust the details of our life to Him over and over again. So I think that as we go to prayer tonight, we should be praying, Lord, keep us faithful.